1001 songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them, as selected by Toby Cresswell, and presented by me, yours truly, Seth Titley Jones. Toby Cresswell, of course, wrote this book, not to show the greatest songs of all time, but what he thought were probably the most influential songs over the past 100 years. The first most influential song over the past 100 years, well, actually, the 162nd greatest song over the past 100 years, as according to him tonight, that we've got for you, is Bobby Womack and Across 110th Street from 1972. One of the first seminal black sepulation films featured an incredible score by jazz composer J.J. Johnson and songs by Bobby Womack. Yeah, and the title track is a beautiful, deep soul tune with as funky as groove as is possible. The film has all the qualities of a great blaxploitation plots: drugs, sleaze, ghetto life, and rough justice. 110th Street is the border of Harlem. Womack, who grew up there, instinctively knew how to marry the content and the music. "I lived there all my life," he said. "When you talk about the ghetto, I can ride that blindfolded. I knew what that was about. I started writing my life story. It's what you do when you're put under pressure. I was always fighting with my record company, United Artists, which is also a film studio. I said, I can't understand why you all go outside of the company and let other artists score movies. Curtis Mayfield, Isaac Hayes, I mean, they're good, but I got the same talent. Why don't y'all do it right here? Bobby, they said, you never scored a movie before. I said, right, well, I never had a hit record before I had one." And this is Bobby Womack and Across 110th Street.
Ah!
And that was Bobby Womack. And across 111th Street right here on 110th Street, rather, right here on Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4. You're listening to 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them, as selected by Toby Cresswell and presented by yours truly, Seth Tetley Jones. That's right. Next up, we've got Amy Mann and Deathly from... director Paul Thomas Anderson wrote his exceptional film Magnolia, he claims, while listening to Amy Mann's songs. The film is about misfits in the Los Angeles night trying to deal with connections between each other and the deep sorrow that they carry. Magnolia is a film about fathers, but Mann's song is about us all. Deathly, which appears in the Magnolia soundtrack, is a song about low self-esteem. Anderson based the character of Claudia on the cocktail waitress on the song. Everything Amy seemed to be thinking were things that I was thinking, he wrote. It's a song about how someone can be afraid to live, and perhaps it's better to die than suffer the indignity of hope. Mann sings the song with her usual beguiling voice that sounds so sweet but creeps upon you with the bitter part. The backing, too, is inventive and seductive. Mann, a former pop star in her 20s, has a mature approach to her song crafts. These are not tunes with easy answers, but they are gorgeous in their complexity. And that's Deathly by Amy Mann right here on Waiheke Radio. Nope. Here we go!
Would you object to never seeing each other again? 'Cause I can afford to climb aboard you. No one's got that much ego to spend, so don't work your stuff, because I
trouble's enough. No, don't pick
Waiheke Radio, that was Amy Mann and Deathly, right here on 1001 Songs. Next up, we got Nirvana and All Apologies from 1993 and their album In Utero. The last song on the last studio album from Kurt Cobain is a song of regret and apology. Hence the title of the song there, All Apologies, in case you'd picked up on that little bit of irony there. As usual, he seems lost in a fog of other people's expectations and his own low self-esteem, you know, the very Kurt Cobainish theme. He was sorry to his fans that he has abandoned them by being successful. He was sorry to his family, but mostly he was sorry to him. Mostly, he was sorry to himself. In Utero was the follow-up to Nevermind. Naturally, Nirvana rejected the pop sound of that breakthrough album and went for a more hardcore producer, the most hardcore producer they could find, the notoriously hardline Steve Abdini. The main reason we recorded the new album In Utero with Steve Abdini is that he's able to get a sound that sounds like the band is in a room no bigger than the one we're in now, said Cobain. In Utero doesn't sound like it was recorded in a hall. No, that it's trying to sound larger than life. It's a very in-your-face and real. Like most of Cobain's lyrics, All Apologies is based around a number of images that are strung together with a solid emotional through line in the melody. For the most part, I write songs from pieces of poetry thrown together, he told John Savage. When I write poetry, it's not usually thematic at all. I have plenty of notebooks, and when it comes to a time to write lyrics, I just steal from my poems. Sometimes I finish the lyrics months before we go into the studio, but for the most part, 90% of them are done in the last minute. All Apologies is right up close and perfectly in the minute, and in a minute here in Waiheke Radio, we're going to have Nirvana and All Apologies.
Oh,
Nirvana there, and All Apologies here on Waiheke Radio 88.3 and 107.4 FM. Also, you can we're live streaming on www.waihekeradio.org.nz, or you can check out our Facebook page on facebook.com/Waiheke Radio. This is 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the, you know, well, I'm sure you can fill in the little the gaps for me, but this is Seth Tetley-Jones, and next up we've got the Band, and Long Black Veil from 1968. Perhaps it's the most famous murder ballad. This song has been extensively covered by country, folk, and rock artists, including Lefty Fritzell, whom the Band learned it, Johnny Cash, Joan Baez, Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, Marianne Faithfull, Jerry Garcia, Burl Ives, Jason and the Scorchers, the Kingston Trio, Bill Monroe, The Move, Fred Neil, the New Riders of the Purple Stage, the Proclaimers, and the Seldom Seen, the Sir, oh, it goes on and on and on, the Sir Douglas Quintet, the Stranglers, Barry White, and many more. As you can see from the diversity of the artists who've covered the song, it has universal quality. Simple waltz here carries a powerful story told from beyond the grave. The narrator was unable to use the alibi that would have saved him from the gallows. He was in the arms of his best friend's wife. Now, 6 feet under, he watches his lover tend his grave. Long Black Veil is romantic and gothic and stark. It suited Rick Danko's plaintive voice and the style to which the Band aspired on their first album. As Jamie Robbie Robertson said, "I thought it was a great song. It was in the tradition that I wanted to begin with. And according to producer Joel Simon, there is much more of a country wail or moan. This was more of a wail from the heart or gut." And this is the Band and Long Black Veil right here on Waiheke Radio. Yeah. And that was The Band and A Long Black Veil from 1968 here on Waiheke Radio. You're listening to 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories and the secrets behind them, as selected by Toby Cresswell and presented by Seth Tetley-Jones. Now, next up, we've got The Crazy World of Arthur Brown and Fire. I am the God of Hellfire, declared Arthur Brown, dressed in phosphorescent robes, black and white face paint with flames shooting out of his hat. He was British psychedelia at his best. Lillian notes, a voice that shifted from gentle softness to raving maniac screeching all in a matter of seconds. Possibly the only voice like it in rock music. Finally, a strange plastic spastic dancing of some sort of space-age ritual. The Crazy World were popular at the Speakeasy, London's hippest club in 1968, where The Who's Pete Townshend and manager Kip Lambert caught the act. Townshend was sufficiently impressed to produce them and the single Fire, powered by the freak-out organ sound of Vincent Crane, made the top of the British charts. Highly theatrical show presented by The Crazy World of Arthur Brown made the group a very popular attraction at underground happenings and festivals quite a few years, but unfortunately there was no second hit single. Organist Vincent Crane went on to other things, including the bands Atomic Rooster and Dexy's Midnight Runners, before his untimely death. Arthur Brown eventually resumed being Arthur Wilton of Whitby East Riding. He resumed teaching and for a time moved to Burundi in West Africa. More recently, he is reported to have been running a painting and decorating business with Jimmy Carr Black of the Mothers of Invention. But there is a part of him that will always be the God of Hellfire.
I am the God of Hellfire, and I bring you fire.
That's him. The Crazy World of Arthur Brown and Fire, right here on Waiheke Radio 88.3 and 107.4. The next of the 1001 songs, right here with me, Seth Tetley Jones, is Coolio and Gangster's Paradise from 1995. Coolio, born Artis Leon Ivy Jr. No, you're not supposed to do that. Go away. That's right. Go away. Thank you. Go away. That's right. Ah, stupid machine. I think we understand now that Arthur Brown, he is the god of hellfire, and he's taken the liberty of saying that to us several times right here. But we've moved on now. Thank you, Mr. Brown. We're now down to Coolio and Gangster's Paradise, who grew up in Crompton in South Central LA. Like many rappers, he did his time with drug addiction, running the gangs and some jail time. But when he went straight, Coolio stayed away from the thug life. His first hit, Fantastic Voyage, was more about booty than violence. However, Coolio's biggest hit was the ballad Gangster's Paradise, which crossed over from R&B chart into the pop list. And then topped that. The record company had so little faith in the song that rather than put it out as a single, they gave it to the soundtrack of the film Dangerous Minds. From there it went ballistic. Based on a riff from Stevie Wonder's Pastime Paradise, Coolio is reflecting on the consequences of gang life and why he escaped it. Coolio's version of life in Crompton was more passionate and more realistic than the music. It had come from N.W.A. or Dr. Dre. Coolio's manner was too agreeable rather than abrasive. And this is him here. And Coolio and Gangster's Paradise. Unless Arthur Brown decides to pop up. Nope, he isn't.
You want to tell me what this is all about?
As I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I take a look at my life and realize there's nothing left. Cause I've been blasting and laughing so long that even my mama thinks that my mind is gone. But I ain't never crossed a man that didn't deserve it. Me be treated like a punk, you know that's unheard of. You better watch how you're talking and where you're walking, or you and your homies might be lying to chalk. I really hate the trip, but I gotta low. As they croak, I see myself in the pistol smoke. Fool, I'm the kind of G the little homies wanna be like. On my knees in the night, saying prayers in the streetlight. Situation they got me facing. I can't live a normal life. I was raised by the street, so I gotta be down with the hood team. Too much television watching got me chasing dreams. I'm an educated fool with money on my mind. Got my tin in my hand and a gleam in my eye. I'm a loped out gangster, set tripping banker. And my homies is down, so don't arouse my anger. Fool, death ain't nothing but a heartbeat away. I'm living life, do or die. What can I say? I'm 23 now, but will I live to see 24? The way things are going, I don't know.
Tell me why.
And the power, minute after minute, hour after hour, everybody's running, but half of them ain't looking. What's going on in the kitchen, but I don't know what's cooking. They say I got to learn, but nobody's here to teach me. If they can't understand it, how can they reach me? I guess they can't, I guess they won't, I guess they front. That's why I know my life is out of luck, fool.
Been standing most alive, living in the desert paradise. We've been standing most alive.
Coolio and Gangster's Paradise. You're listening to 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them, as selected by Toby Creswell and presented by me, Seth Tetley Jones, right here on Waiheke Radio 88.3 and 107.4. And also, you don't forget, you can check us out on waihekeradio.org.nz or facebook.com/waihekeradio. And don't forget to click like at the top of the page if you are inclined to go on Facebook. I am, you know. I can't explain why, which incidentally is the title of our next song. Just thought I'd throw in a little nice work it in for you there. I Can't Explain by The Who from 1965. When The Who went into the studio and cut this track in late 1964, they were a mod R&B combo from Shepherd's Bush, one of the failed singles under their with one failed single under their belt. There was so little expected from the group that producer Shel Tolmy had booked the guitarist Jimmy Page for the second to cover for Pete Townsend, and girl group Ivy Lee to cover for difficulties with the vocals. At the end of 2 hours it took to cut two sides, The Who emerged with a unique and explosive sound and a songwriter who could change the course of rock and roll a few times. Tolmy, who produced The Kinks, London's other major group, and aspired, as did The Who, to make a record that sounded like The Kinks. Well, bit of spoonerism there, didn't think that Pete's lead guitar was up to it, and he didn't think our backing vocals were up to it, recalled singer Roger Daltrey. He was right about the backing vocals, and obviously in those days you weren't in overdub facilities. You made the record, and that was it, so if you wanted to put a solo on, you had to do it when you were doing the record. Page plays a rhythm guitar on the track, and lead on the flip side, Tolmy's tune Blue Headed Woman. That's the flip side. Bald Headed Woman, I mean. There's little to say about how I wrote this, Townsend said in 1971. It came about out of the top of my head when I was 18 and a half. It seems to be about the frustrations of a young person who is incoherent and uneducated, and that he can't state his case to the bourgeoisie intellectual, blah, blah, blah. Of course, it might be about drugs. Don't really know. He can't explain why. There we go. There's a little phrase again. Can't explain by The Who. Can't Explain by The Who from 19... No, that can't be right. It said there 1958, but it's actually 1965. Up next, we got another Nirvana track, a slightly earlier one. This one's Aneurysm. According to Nirvana, this was a recent attempt at getting back into our new wave roots. Aneurysm was definitely rocks. It's more of a pop song than almost everything else on the Nevermind album. Aneurysm has a gigantic, crunching two-chord chorus and a massive descending riff that is just perfect for arenas and blows the walls out of small theatres in which Nirvana mostly played. Russia, the tune and the lyrics suggest that the inspiration for the song was Kurt's affection for heroin. The drug was readily available in his teens, and indeed it swept through the Seattle music scene like a plague. Cobain had been a long-term junkie. He claimed that the heroin was mostly for the analgesic benefits it gave him as relief from chronic stomach pain. "I'd taken heroin for about a year and a half," Cobain told John Savage, "but the addiction didn't get that way until the band stopped touring about a year and a half ago. But now things have got better. Ever since I've been married and had a child, within the last year, my whole mental and physical state has improved almost 100%. I'm really excited about touring again. I'm totally optimistic. I haven't felt optimistic since my parents got divorced, you know?" Like most junkies, Cobain was not being honest about his drug use, which was chronic. It had been bad before the group started, and it just got worse as Cobain's responsibilities increased. A year after this track was released, Cobain's drug habits had torn the bands asunder and made recording nigh impossible. But on Aneurysm, he's full of life. Everything is possible, and nothing matters except riding the firestorm of the track. And this is Nirvana and Aneurysm. Nirvana. And Aneurysm. On Waiheke Radio. And this is 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets. And there's chairs slipping out from under me. Swivel chairs in the studio. Health hazard. You're listening to Waiheke Radio, and this is 1001 Songs, and I am Seth, and this is The Jam, and Down the Tube Station at Midnight. The third Jam album in less than 2 years started inauspiciously. The initial demo tapes presented to Polydor were rejected, and singer Paul Weller was persuaded to record a Kinks song, David Waits, as a filler. Then Weller found himself as a writer. Firstly, a bomb in Wardour Street, which captured the paranoia, violence and anger and the siege mentality of London undergoing an IRA bombing campaign. Weller's first single with The Jam was In the City. He made London a core, a part of his writing. It was the landscape on which he projected his emotional life. While contemporaries The Clash and The Sex Pistols drew their inspiration exclusively from across the Atlantic, Weller was steeped in British sounds and rhythm, and the lyrics were too particular in their detail to come from anywhere else. Down the Tube Station at Midnight is a complex narrative telling the story of a man who is on his way home with a takeaway curry, and he gets mugged in the train station. The detail is so acute that you can picture the thugs and feel his humiliation as he hits the concrete. Weller turns the perfectly ordinary location of a train station, not a train station, it's a tube station, thank you Mr. Cresswell, it's an Australian talking there, into a horror show. Much of it is carefully chosen detail. The queen on the coin, the graffiti from some atheist nutter, the toffee wrappers, wormwood scrubs, and too many right-wing meetings. And I can't remember how that bit of the song goes, so I'll just say it to you, won't sing it. If I did, I'd sing it, but you know. Then there are the details that make up the life, telling them here he speaks of both hopelessness of daily life and the black futility of taking it. And then there's the chilling coda. They took the keys, I think it's me. And with just that couplet, you can picture the whole Clockwork Orange scenario. Down the Tube Station at Midnight is powered by The Jam hitting their straps and moving out of the punk thrash of the first two albums. Here's The Light and Shade and a steadily increasing tension. Tube Station at Midnight marked the point where The Jam and Paul Weller came out of the shadows of the 60s forefathers and laid ground for the new era of British rock that carried right through to the Britpop of the 90s and beyond. This is The Jam and Down the Tube Station at Midnight.
Bought in faraway trains to take them home to the ones that they love and who love them forever. The Christ 30 steps, repeat my own and reflect my thoughts, cold and uninviting, partially naked, so far toffee wrappers and the smallest papers. Mr. Jones got run down, headlines of death and soul, the terror of tomorrow, madmen on the rampage, and I'm down in the justice of the midnight. Oh. I fumble for change, pull out the queen, smiling big at in. I put in the money and pull out a plum behind me. Whispers in the shadows, rock blazing voices, hating, waiting. Hey boy, they shout, have you got any money? And I say, I'm gonna take money and I take away the curry. I'm on the way home to my wife. She's been lining up the country and now she's expecting me. Polishing her glasses and pulling out the coke. I'm down in a two-step.
first felt a fist, and then a kick. Could now smell their breath, the smell of pubs and wormwood scrubs, and too many right-wing meetings. My life swam around me, it took a look and drowned me in its own existence. The smell of brown leather, even in eating with the weather. No, my eyes is not a mouth of love, so my senses couldn't see it. Speaking in longer, I'm now in a Tuesday till I'm midnight. I said I'm one down in a Tuesday till I'm midnight. Hey, hey, hey. Now I'm singing out, so I'm lying there on a boat in Jesus' sights. My day by night, the years, not a head of British rail, puzzling. Have I a white day? A cheap holiday? A dream to die?
That was The Jam and Down in a Tube Station at Midnight. Now, it's coming up to the end of the show, but I think we've got time for Everybody Hurts by R.E.M. You'd think they'd be happy, R.E.M. They were kings of the world in 1992 after the commercial breakthrough of Out of Time album. Their next record, though, was Sorrowful and Brooding. The album took a relatively long time to record, cut in studios in three cities. The song was superficially simple but were made up of complex layers of atmospherics and subtle touches. The stuff we were tuning out was pretty dark, say guitarist Peter Buck told John O'Donnell. It was as if we gave him a bunch of pop songs and he wrote them down, these lyrics. Overall, I think the record is pretty positive, but there are certain songs about death. It's a kind of inward looking more than anything. Sometimes you've got to let the music direct you, and this time I just felt that everything we wrote was really quality. Musically and lyrically, it tended to be more reflective and slower. R.E.M., Everybody Hurts, is a painful ballad with a straightforward melody line, courtesy of drummer Bill Berry. An almost prosaic lyric from Stripe that is sung with heartbreaking directness. The subject of Everybody Hurts is exactly what it sounds like, said Mills. The song became the group's biggest hit, as was the album for the Automatic for the People. From which Everybody Hurts is off. I bought this awful $20 Univox drum machine, said Buck. But it made sense because the song had a metronomish feel. Mike and I cut it live with this dumb drum machine, and which was as wooden as you can get. We wanted to get this flow around the human and non-human. At the same time, this is Everybody Hurts by R.E.M.
Feel like Sometimes everybody hurts. Sometimes hold on, hold on, hold on, hold on,
Everybody Hurts by R.E.M. That was 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them, as selected by Toby Creswell and presented by yours truly, Seth Tetley-Jones, who will, incidentally, be back next week, next Monday, at 8 p.m. Between that time, you can catch my show on demand. Anyway, just go to www.waihikiradio.org.nz, and it should all be made perfectly clear from there.